When I hear the words coach your best, it comes to mind the relentless pursuit of excellence, which means if I'm going to give my best and be the best and help others become their best, then I've got to be the leader. And on a scale of 1 to 10, it means I've got to give 20. That means I've always got to get better. I could never think I'm good enough. And I've always got to leave that day of coaching feeling like I left it all out there for the kids. I'm not coming home with any of my energy, any of my knowledge, any of my skids, any of my skills. I'm giving them everything I got.
This is the Coach Your Best podcast, hosted by performance coach, speaker, and best-selling author, Jeremy Boone. Brought to you by athletebydesign.com, helping you to become a world-class coach. Today's episode features coaches you should know. Now, here's your host, Jeremy Boone.
Hey, I'm Jeremy Boone, and welcome to the show. If you're a first-time listener, great to have you. You are in for a really special treat this episode. If you're a regular listener to the Coach Your Best podcast, this episode will not disappoint. I have on the show today my man, Zach Evans. Zach and I go back a long way, and I've been trying to get him on the show and connect our schedules for quite some time. And we're going to get into everything under the sun, including Zach's viewpoint on using technology, the phrase advanced training, working with young athletes. What do you do if you have minimal equipment? And what do you do if you work with young athletes and you have the crazy sports parent, and a whole lot more? I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. Let's get going with my buddy, Zach Evanish. Okay, I'd like to welcome to the Coach Your Best podcast, my man, Zach Evanish. Zach, how are you, brother?
I'm great, dude. I'm pumped up to be here.
Hey, listen, it has been a long time coming to get you on the show. Gosh, we've known each other for so long. You get me so pumped up. I'm laughing right now because here, just leading up before we started recording, man, we're both standing up. We're moving. How are you, brother?
I'm great, man. The morning, kicking it off, ready to crush it. I'm fired up. Fired up every morning because I got a purpose.
Yeah, I like it. You know, and so many coaches don't. They just think they want to be able to have a label, right, of I'm a coach that I work with athletes, and they just try to live behind that label. And I know that we're going to get into some of that with you. You know, the purpose of this episode, Zach, when I teed this up in the intro, is coaches you should know. And I know you've got a big following, and we're going to talk about underground strength coach, but for the listeners of the Coach Your Best podcast that don't know much about you, let's jump right in and talk about your path, a little bit about your story, and most importantly, how did you become a coach?
Sure. So I'm 40 years old now. You and I met at one of the kind of earliest sports training/marketing events. Back then, Ryan Lee would hold an event that was part training, part business, to teach us how to really take our high level training, take our training knowledge to another level, and then go out there and change lives with it. So, I'm 40 years old, and I got probably serious into sports, even though I was always involved in sports as a kid. When I got into high school, my older brother convinced me to join the wrestling team, and that really changed my life because I was a soccer player leading up to that. Come from a real blue collar family where basically in the morning I'd wake up and mom and dad weren't there. There was a bowl of cereal and a warm glass of milk waiting outside, but they would leave the house at 6 a.m. My brother and I wake up, have cereal, walk to school. And then in eighth grade, my brother joined the high school wrestling team. He was a sophomore. I was an eighth grader. And I saw how it changed his life. He would be training in all like ways that he could. He'd say stuff like, Zach, I set this new goal for myself that if I'm hungry and I want to open the refrigerator, I have to do 10 push-ups first. So you'd see him doing push-ups all the time, or you'd see him doing pull-ups hanging off of the garage door. Like, he was always finding a way to train, and he convinced me that wrestling is this, you know, the most amazing sport, and he started having me train with him. We'd go to the park, we'd run the stairs, we'd run at the park. He had me doing calisthenics, and I began training for a sport that I'd never been involved in. And a long story short, back then, I got into high school 89, graduated 93. You know, the training knowledge back then was bodybuilding and, you know, pump your muscles. There wasn't the knowledge of what we see today. So I trained the wrong way, really the wrong way for a sport that requires a lot of strength, a lot of explosiveness. And it essentially negated my training, not just from a physical standpoint, but a mental, emotional standpoint. So it really fired me up. You know, I wasn't a very successful high school wrestler, even though I worked tremendously hard. And getting out of high school, first year in college, I started coaching. I started coaching the rec wrestling team, the sixth grade team. And I fell in love with it right away. I think that having such a tough time in the sport itself, it gave me a deeper understanding into what it takes beyond just the sport skills, regardless of whatever that sport was. And I got involved in coaching. I was 18 years old. By the time the season started, I was 17 because I entered college age 17. I turned 18 December of my freshman year. And since then, I've always been involved in coaching. But in my mid-20s, became a teacher. And in my fifth year teaching, I tore my ACL during jiu-jitsu training. And that really kind of struck a nerve with me because that was going to be my first serious surgery. Before that, I had a meniscus cleaned up, you know, a simple scope. But I had a rotator cuff tear. Before that, I had injured my back and I hit a wall. And it was a pivotal time in my life where I said, I'm going to find out the best way to train athletes, specifically wrestlers. And I remember being wheeled down on the hospital bed, going into surgery, saying, as soon as I'm out of this surgery, I'm like waging war. I'm going to learn what strength and conditioning is. And the best wrestlers were coming from Russia. So I said, I'm going to research everything the Russians do. And that was the beginning of like being a madman possessed. So I think that surgery, I was a fifth year teacher. So I was like 27 maybe. And now 40. So I've been in strength and conditioning for about 13, 14 years, although training knowledge comes from everything I've done dating back to 1989. So I've been involved in coaching, but now I own a couple of strength and conditioning facilities. And a lot of what we do, a lot of what I tell the coaches we need to do as a team is, you know, I say our training has to be probably more mental and emotional and psychological than it is physical, but they do go hand in hand. But we address a lot of that stuff through the training, through the communication. And since then, you know, I've worked with athletes from youth to guys preparing for Olympic trials and everything in between. And, you know, I always say you can't fake results, meaning, you know, your workout could look amazing on paper or on a whiteboard, but what kids actually need is oftentimes so different than this advanced stuff that we read about and see, you know, on the internet. And being involved in coaching athletes since, you know, now I have facilities. But when I started, and I think when I met you the first time, I was training athletes out of my house.
Yep, that's right.
Before that, I was training them out of my parents' house, out of the garage, the local playgrounds. And it sounds very, you know, Rocky-like, but we were building, or just me, it was me training the kids. I was building badasses. They were getting strong, tough, explosive. And I think having that lack of resources rather than like an awesome weight room and all these, you know, perfect things, that helped me. It helped me become resourceful. It helped me understand training them in a way that was imperfect, which actually was perfect for the situation, because athletes should not have, you know, perfect a perfect situation, because as you and I know, in sports, in competition, nothing is absolute, nothing is perfect. So our training really resembled that. So what started out of my parents' garage moved to the first house my wife and I bought, and from there opened up a warehouse gym, and now I've got two warehouse gyms. A third one is going to be opening in like late October, and then we have a fourth one going inside of a baseball facility just for baseball players, because nowadays, and this probably started, you know, when you've been around the game longer than me, but when we were younger as athletes, it was like in the fall, you played a fall sport. So there was no such thing as fall baseball. There was no such thing as, you know, wrestling. You know, nowadays kids could, the amount of work they do, I say, like, if you are a baseball player who's 15, but you started playing at age like 8, you've got like 3 times the amount of mileage on your body than kids you and I had back then, because we didn't do that sport year round. So it's just a whole different ballgame of how to train these kids, working around this, basically this concept of year round single sport. Some of them are dual sports. That happens in maybe some of the, you know, quote unquote old school towns. But, you know, even my daughter, she just turned 10, and the tennis coach is like, you know, you've got to be here, it's year round, da, da, da. And I said, like, you know, I know, look, I know you guys want her here year round, but I want her to play basketball in the winter, so she gets a little bit of a break, not just physically, but emotionally. So it's a different ball game. So I've seen this kind of evolution and experienced it myself of what athletes used to do compared to what they do now. And in my early days of training kids out of the house, I tell you, they showed up with less of these imbalances and mobility issues and even psychological issues compared to today. So it's all these unique things we have to address as coaches are so much more than just strength and conditioning. I think that's a big, it's almost like a blanket statement now. You know, there's a lot more to it than just the training program. Yeah.
Well, gosh, I mean, there's so many good nuggets there. You said, and I got to circle back to your statement about the Russian style of training. I mean, there's some stuff that the Russians did we can't do here in the States now, Zach.
Yeah, you know, it's like so funny that you see that all the doping issues happening. And I say to myself, the first book that I read was from Dr. Yessi's it was called Secrets of Soviet Sports and Fitness Training.
Yes,
so back then it was Soviet Union.
Yes.
You know, coaches could probably get that from a library. Now it's called Secrets of Russian Sports and Fitness Training. But the book was, I don't recall when it was published. And I remember the stories in it, though, were dating back to before I was born. I was born in 75, and I recall Dr. Yessi's talking about his visits in the maybe 74. And their training back then, so now we're talking 40 years later, is still much more advanced than what a lot of Americans were doing or are doing today, just because of the knowledge base. And then actually a coach from Russia commented on a recent YouTube video, and he said, look, he goes, in Russia, we still struggle with the same things you guys do, meaning if you're a very good coach, you know, you might get pulled into a big city and then they'll have you there to coach. But if you're in kind of a rural area away from the city, you're going to be coaching multiple sports. But what I was saying was the Russian coaches, they were not just an expert in the sport, but the sport coach was also the physical preparation coach. Mm. Whereas nowadays, it's not like that. These coaches had a lot of experience that was different than the book experience that we would get if we go through an exercise science, undergraduate degree. Yep. And I say, like, these Russians, like, they're being caught doping when I don't think, like, they need to. It's like, you know, you hear of powerlifters using it to enhance recovery. You hear about bodybuilders using it. It's like chemical warfare for them. It increases muscle size. But, you know, I think there's obviously a lot of political pressures over there. From what I understand, a lot of our American wrestlers, when they wrestle, they will go to some of these very tough regions throughout Russia. They'll go to like or those states outside of Russia, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Belarus, some of these tough areas. And they tell me that just the skill level of those Russian wrestlers is so high that they don't send their A team. They often send their B teams to those tournaments. They don't send their A team until it's time for the World Championships or the Olympics. And it's like, you know, I don't know what the situation in America is with performance and whatever the doping drugs are, but here there's other issues. I think over there it's that old saying, I forget that movie, the guy comes back, he's a boxer, and he's like, I'm not fighting, you know, to win. Like, I'm fighting for milk, like to provide for my family.
Yeah.
So it's a whole different mindset overseas, where like in Russia, if you're doing very good in your sport, then your family's taken care of. They have a different kind of pressure there. But I always say, like, take away all the drugs, and I feel like the supreme athlete, genetically, skill-wise, will probably still always win anyway. I almost feel like it's a psychological thing for them. But from a training standpoint, right?
Yep.
The Russians and a lot of these overseas coaches and athletes, their methods are the ones that some of the best American coaches have adopted, that knowledge of training. Because in America, in the late 80s, we were all bodybuilding. And people were still saying, you're going to get muscle bound. You can't train that way. And not until probably 10, 12 years ago has that strength and conditioning coach profession really taken off. And it's more so down by you in North and South Carolina. They have strength coaches in a lot of the public schools in New Jersey. You know, they really only do that in the private prep schools. So there's certain areas in, you know, America that's ahead of the curve. And even last year, you know, a school in South Carolina wanted me to come in for an interview, and the athletes do required, even though it's like a class, it was like a weight training class. It's their way of having a full-time strength coach in there. They right. don't do that here. You know, talking about coaching and being great. Somebody asked me yesterday, and Jeremy, cut me off anytime because guys always, I always say, man, you ask me one question, it takes like 20 minutes to answer. But yesterday somebody asked me on my Instagram, like, where you come up with this saying, the relentless pursuit of excellence? Like, what book is that from? And the story goes like this, and this will make sense when I answer this. Maybe like 4 years ago, somewhere like 4 years ago, a coach I'm friends with, the reason why I became friends with him is I trained one of his athletes from his team, and that kid went on and just crushed it. We started getting more kids from that school, and we may have had like 6 kids. So he brought me into his school for the in-service, for the physical education, health and phys ed teachers and the coaches. And I take the athletes through our warm-up, through our athletic warm-up, and the teachers are all there. And then we're walking outside to go to the track, and there's like a little building, very small, like 900,000 square foot, little weight room. And I was going to show them how to incorporate short workouts into the phys ed class or in-season workouts. And I was going to show them how to use dumbbells, body weight, and, you know, sprint work and jump work on the track. And as we're walking out to the track with the whole staff, I see this one coach just make a left turn, and he's just like walking. And I'm saying to myself, is that coach leaving, or is he like, maybe he's got to get something from his car? So I don't really know what's going on, but in my mind, I'm like, I know I wouldn't have been able to do that. I taught for 11 years. I know if the athletic director saw a teacher leaving, I just never saw it happen. It right. wouldn't happen.
Right.
So we go out to lunch after I train the athletes and I do all the coaching for the coaches and do Q&A, go out to lunch. And he says to me, he goes, did you see that guy leave? I go, yeah, I didn't know like what was going on there. He goes, the whole reason I organized this is mostly for him. He's the football coach. And I don't remember if they were 0-10 the year before or 1-9.
Oh.
He goes, he is the reason why I brought you here. I wanted to show him what he could do and what you could do or what we could learn from you to help the football team. And he left. He goes, the relentless pursuit of excellence just doesn't exist anymore. Uh-huh. He's like, I can't take it. And he was so fired up. And that's where this saying went from, is like, you should never feel like you're too good. So that team and that coach was 0-10 or 1-9. I don't recall. But let's say he was 10-0. If I was 10-0, I'd still be front and center trying to see what is the one thing I could learn from this guy on how to get my team better, whether it's from a physical standpoint, a psychological standpoint. So everything I do, that was a very pivotal moment for me, even though I had been coaching for years. I'd probably coached hundreds of athletes by then, from youth to Division I already. But I'm always like trying to learn something new, not just from other coaches, but from the athletes I get to work with. I'm trying to learn from them. Right now we have an intern that's going through the program, and I tell him, like, here's books I want you to read, here's podcasts I want you to listen to, but your best learning is when you're going to be here on the ground floor listening to these kids, getting to know them, learning what works for Jeremy may not work for Zach, just because we're two different guys personality-wise, or look at our physiques and such and so on. This guy, his team is losing, right? They've got a 90 or 100% losing streak, and he's still got a job, and he walked away. That's like being a teacher, and everybody gets an F, and nobody's questioning that, and you're not trying to get better. That's how I look at those things. And to me, it's unacceptable, because in my heart, in my mind, I always say the kids deserve everything you got and more. So when I try to explain to coaches, how do you coach? I say, on a scale of 1 to 10, you have to be 20.
No, that's
which
right.
Means, yeah, it's like you've got it's exhausting to actually coach that way, but it's the right way. So yesterday I got home from coaching, and I was just crushed. And that's how I know I did it right, because I didn't try to, like, reserve my energy. I didn't try to coast for the next group or the next group. It's all out attention to detail. And that relentless pursuit of excellence is not an easy way to live, because it pushes people away. It scares people and intimidates people. Sometimes it sends the wrong message across, because people are not used to that. We're so accepting of, like, that football coach has a 90 or 100% record of losses. He still has a job. But Jeremy, imagine if you, doing what you do, teaching the leadership and coaching the coaches, imagine if you sucked. Okay, that's what when you have 100% loss, you suck, right? You suck. That's the bottom line. That's the truth. But you wouldn't keep that job. You wouldn't be hired by the schools. But in coaching, sometimes I think schools kind of don't have many options. They don't have another person they could hire, or sometimes they let supervisors like that, because that person's not going to bother them. That person's not going to be talking about, I need to bring in Jeremy to speak to our kids. And then the supervisor's got to find ways to fundraise and pay you or whatnot. Or we need to update our weight room. They don't want to hear that stuff. Sometimes a lot of people like to just coast. I don't know why, but it is the way it is. And I'm not standing for that. I am pushing for the relentless pursuit of excellence, which means it has nothing to do with wins or losses. There's that book, I think, called The Score Takes Care of Itself, or yep. Hurt, something like that.
Yep.
And it's like, if you do all the right things, like if we pay attention to detail during sports practice, if we pay attention to detail with strength and conditioning, if we pay attention to being the best we can in the classroom as students, in our social life. So I'm talking about excellence in academics, social life, athletics, not just one area. Like, the score is going to take care of itself. And, you know, winning and losing is more of an internal thing before the points are on the board. And if you go out and battle your hardest, and maybe the points don't reflect you as the winner, you could still walk away proud saying, man, I left it all out there. And eventually the score will take care of itself.
Yeah, you're right. God, such good stuff, brother. That's why I love love spending time with you. Let me circle back here, yep. Zach, and talk to us a little bit more about, you're obviously pretty passionate with your own kids, making sure they're playing multiple sports. Today's youth have therefore limited time to really get any kind of training in. So how are you addressing, with what you're able to do up there in Jersey, the time factor with athletes who say, I be the best, I want to protect my mission because here's what it is, but at the end of the day, coach, I just don't have time for training. How are you dealing with that with today's youth sports?
So there's two things in that. Number one, it comes down to the parents, really, because most of the kids we train don't have their license. So, you know, legitimately, if a parent lives far away, their other option is to find something closer. But I always say showing up once a week is 100% more than zero, and it makes a huge difference. So when an athlete will train just in the off season and they always stop training during the season, it's always the same parents. He's not going to have time. He's not going to do this. And it's like, I know it's going to be tough, but you got to find a way to get here once a week. He's going to have to do homework in the car. He might have to eat his dinner in the car on the way home. But this is what it takes to be great. We're not training to be good enough. And I also say, you know, without science involved, here's the common sense explanation. You train all off season. You build yourself up physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically. You're building yourself to be the best. And then when the most important time comes, which is the sports season, you stop. Now here's the simple Q&A. Can you continue to get stronger, more confident, tougher without doing the very thing that without lifting, without the training? You can't. It's like saying, Jeremy, you could get ripped without eating healthy. It just doesn't happen. You could deadlift 500 pounds without lifting. That will not happen. So we offer that once a week in season. Even though I believe you could train more, I'd rather see the kids do 2 to 3 times a week, 20-minute sessions. But I also know that they just can't. They can't be driving here, there, everywhere. And also the amount of games and tournaments and matches athletes have nowadays is basically double when I was in high school. So when I was in high school, we would wrestle 1 to 2 matches a week. We would have like 15 matches by the end of the season. Kids today have 30 matches. So they're like double, which cuts down practice time. And coaches always tell me, they're like, we actually don't get better that way. It's too much competing, not enough practice. So what I'm doing now from a business standpoint is our third location is going to be inside of a building with a wrestling club. So now the kids will train with us and then they will wrestle. Whereas the other locations, you've got to drive here, drive there. You're kind of like a road runner, you know, and for parents, they have to be super highly dedicated to their kids to stick to that. And some are highly dedicated, just like in sports, you have that top 3%. Yep. Then you've got kind of that middle group, which will train leading up to the season and then they'll stop. And then you've got another small group that will continue with a once a week in-season program. So the convenience factor is huge. The tough thing is somebody like me, you know, you can't even volunteer your services. People either want it or they don't. That's what I've learned. We do a lot of ongoing education for our parents. And the bottom line is like, you either want to be the best or you don't. And I feel like there's not a whole lot of middle ground there. So as a parent myself, I always tell other parents, I go, I'm communicating to you as a parent, not as a coach. Here's what I do with my kids. We drive everywhere we got to drive. And that means weekdays, weekends. It means eating in the car. It means homework gets done in the car because I want to give my kids the best opportunity to succeed. So we're not going to the tennis club that's 5 minutes from our house. We go to the tennis club that's the best. And one of them is 30 minutes away. The other one's about 45, 50 minutes away. Lucky for my son, there's a baseball center in town that is top notch. But when he goes to wrestling, it's about 20 minutes away. Now, other people they refuse to leave their town, meaning if it's inconvenient, they won't do it. Now, I want you, everybody, to really listen to this. Convenience and excellence are never found on the same street. Never. You will never find a champion who had this kind of smooth sailing. You'll never find a great coach who everything was just super convenient for him. I just got to show up, turn the lights on. It's so easy. It's never easy. Excellence comes with many obstacles, which a champion will turn obstacle into opportunity, struggles into strength, you know, tragedy into triumph. So it's a big mindset. And that's why the mindset, what you do, is so critical, because if the mind is not proper, then nothing, it like cancels out all the other efforts, you know, which is why two coaches, or, you know, all across the country, right? What do football coaches have? They all have a weight room. They all have a football. They all have a coaching staff, and they all have a football field. So it's the recipe. It's how do they coach? How do they utilize, you know, the things that they have? And it's a level playing field.
Yeah.
You can communicate and build people up. So really the thing is like this, it is the educating. And then I call it the human food chain. It's like the animal food chain. There's going to be the predator and the prey. And as much as I have this conversation with my friend Joe DeSena, who owns the Spartan Race, I go, as much as you want everybody to be healthy and fit and motivated, it will never happen. There's no such thing as everybody being great, because then everybody would win the Super Bowl, right? All the teams. And there would be no silver and bronze medal. It would be, but we don't share the gold medal. There's one gold medalist. And that is the way of the world. As much as I want every athlete to get a Division I scholarship and to win a state championship and a conference championship and so forth, it doesn't happen that way.
Nope.
Somebody's going to train harder and smarter. Yep. Somebody's going to sleep better. They're going to live a better lifestyle. Somebody's going to read better books, watch better movies, hang out with better friends. And there's also some luck involved. Geographically speaking, you might be in a program where they have a great youth program. And it's just kind of part of the whole system where you grow up in that town and you've got great people doing great things for the football, for the soccer, for the baseball, for the wrestling. You know, I live in a town where it's like, hey, we always did it that way. And the same team keeps losing over and over and over again. And they're not changing. They're not trying to do anything better. And to me, that's what a true coach is, always trying to get better.
Yeah.
Always trying to get better. You don't need outside resources saying, hey, man, you went 3-7. You went 1-15. You went whatever. Look, you got to do something better. It's why do you got to do something better? Because the kids deserve better. So how do the kids get better? The coach has to get better.
You talked earlier in the beginning of our conversation, Zach, about the need for young athletes not necessarily to go after – you know, advanced training exercises. And we've got a ton of listeners here on the podcast that are younger coaches, and they're put out in front of them technology and the latest, you know, top 10 exercises with certain types of equipment. And then, you know, that becomes a temptation, I think, for a lot of younger performance coaches and strength coaches to always chase the novel. And one of the statements that came to mind for me that I say when I heard you mention that was chasing novel to the exclusion of necessary, you know. Yes. Wrap us up here in this episode a little bit about that idea of not falling into the trap for young coaches of trying to do all this advanced stuff.
I'm going to quote, and I'm probably going to mess it up, but a friend of mine, Jim Kiritsy, is the strength coach at Kennesaw State, Georgia, which is a D1AA football program. I think this is his second or third year. Before that, he was with the Citadel. And I said, hey, man, I watch your Instagram videos, and I see you guys squatting, benching, doing bent over row, pull-ups, you know, sprints. I see you guys jumping, like all these basics. I don't see anything crazy. And he said something to the effect of, do the simple things savagely well,
yeah,
meaning the relentless pursuit of excellence. So the other day, one of the kids I trained told me he was training with a kid that doesn't train with us. And he said they go to the weight room and the kid unracks the bar from the bench and like slams it to his chest and bounces it up. And then second rep slams it and like squirms and inchworms all over the place. And this is what I said to somebody recently. I go, man, if we just did farmer walks, sprints, pull-ups and push-ups and sled drags, we could like cure 90% of these like issues of all the like crazy training. I mean, I watched you guys, you were training your NFL guys and it's like they weren't doing any of these crazy things, but they were doing the simple things savagely well. And I wasn't with you in the weight room, but when I saw video footage, they're doing the board press, the floor press, they're doing clapping push-ups, they're doing pull-ups, because you could never escape the basics. The basics performed with like relentless pursuit of excellence will be for the win. And, you know, what we need is more of a system in place, which is what we don't have so much of in America. Whereas Russians do this. They have kind of these younger kids do all these multiple sports. My dad grew up in Romania. His phys ed class was doing all these multiple things. They would do running and jumping on the track and field for 20 minutes. 20 minutes of handball, 20 minutes of soccer, 20 minutes of wrestling. Then they had small shot put, small like throwing implements. This is at age 9 and 10 they're doing this. And then he said every semester the coaches would come, weigh the kids. They'd be in their boxers and they would say they'd weigh them, check their height. And then they would pull kids into the sport that they were best suited for physically, mentally. This kid's aggressive. We move him into wrestling. This kid's got great hand-eye coordination. We move him into the tennis program. You know, they built these kids up. And I think nowadays kids get to high school and we're trying to teach them how to power clean when they can't do a bodyweight squat. We're trying to have them squat, you know, when they can't do a bodyweight squat with a flat back past halfway down, not even parallel. So we need to have a system in place and we need to stop being fancy, because I tell my kids, I go, look, whether we squat on a box or not won't be the difference of you winning a state title or not. Whether you bench press or not doesn't matter either. Sports skills are critical. Your mindset is critical. And then, you know, I often say we may not lift more weight than the next guy, but we're going to be stronger, tougher, faster, more explosive. So it's not about the exercises. It's about how you do them. And kids today compared to 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they have more mobility issues than I've seen before. Meaning when I first started training kids out of my garage, I'd be like, squat, pull up, clapping push-ups, farmer walk, put a bar on your back, squat, boom. Everything was done. They were all athletic. Now, or even like every 2 years, you see this kind of decline in kids where it's like their ankles are all jacked up. Their hips don't rotate properly, so they kind of get stuck halfway into a squat, and then they hunch over. So they can't squat. They can't power clean. The only thing those kids are probably ready to do is – farmer walk, sled drag, recline row, you know, body weight stuff. So we need to do the basics savagely well. And that all revolves around the umbrella of the relentless pursuit of excellence. You got to give these kids what they need, not what looks cool.
Great way to wrap this up. You know, I think to add on to that, part of my frustration was always having the opportunity to work with these kids during their off season. They build a new skill set. They're getting their basics of strength and speed and fundamental movement skills. They get into their season, and then halfway through their season, because they haven't continued these basic things, right? They just literally stop it. Then they get hurt. And then it would come back on, oh, well, Coach Boone, your program is getting athletes hurt. Wait a minute. No, they would stop my program 8 to 12 weeks ago. You know, so at that point, there's no influence there of where the coaches were. But listen, just dropping knowledge bombs. I love and always appreciate your energy. I gotta kind of reveal for the listeners this summer. Zach got to come out and hang out. Bless me for sure down here in Charlotte and with the football guys I get to work with. And it was a great, unique setting for Zach because it was the first time he didn't get to work out. Zach is always, and I love it, and it gets me fired up, always working out, posting videos on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, when he's with athletes, he's working out. And so I know you didn't get to do that this summer. You kind of stood on the sidelines, which drove you crazy. But next summer, brother, when you come back down, you're getting in the game. And I know you're definitely going to make my guys better. So just appreciate all you do there. Tell us, you know, where can listeners go to find out more about you and connect with you as we close out?
Yeah, best thing, go to the blog or the website, has all the links to, you know, the Instagram, the YouTube. Go to undergroundstrength.tv. That's the ZachEvanesh.com site. And just sign up for the newsletter. And you'll get my newsletter. We got a podcast called the Strong Life Podcast. And you could just go on Instagram, hashtag Strong Life, and you'll find my stuff. And everything kind of, you know, splinters off from there. So I'm pretty easy to find.
I like it. Listen, let's look forward to having you back here. Yes. Getting to next spring, my friend. And thanks for joining us.
Cool. Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks, guys.
This has been another episode of the Coach Your Best podcast with Jeremy Boone. Get even more helpful tips and free coaching resources to help you become a world-class coach by visiting athletebydesign.com.
Well, that wraps up today's episode. And as you can tell, there's no one that has more enthusiasm and is motivated to help other people get better than my buddy Zach. And hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, jump on iTunes, type in Coach Your Best Podcast, and do me a favor. Will you leave a rating and review of the show? Help us spread the word to help other coaches make their athletes better. Would definitely appreciate it. Coming up on the next episode of the Coach Your Best Podcast will be an exciting episode with my buddy Carl Valley. And we're going to talk all things from testing, training, and what's going on with the myth of using medicine balls. I think you're really going to find some interesting points that my buddy Carl makes. With that said, we'll see you next time on the Coach Your Best Podcast.